Good morning, if it is morning. This is Sven Gulli, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for June 16th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasselflaw.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Boy, I tell you what, Chip, we're not going to have a lot of time to find more information this week because the calendar is full this week.
It's a full calendar. You know, that's really important because with the COVID-19 still going on, Steve, COVID-19 watch. Week 85.
It's the longest spring break ever.
No kidding.
So today is the 40th anniversary of the Blues Brothers, my favorite movie of all time. We got a bunch of our hooligan friends together and talked about it on Saturday. We'll have that in the show notes for you to go and listen to because, boy, that was a fun conversation, Chip.
So either grab like four fried chickens and a Coke or a piece of white toast, and either one, and celebrate with us.
I love the Blues Brothers. I had so much fun talking to you and the boys about that on Saturday. Today is also the 41st anniversary of Rich Coe's taking up the mantle of Sven Gulli. So happy anniversary to Rich Coe's and Sven Gulli. By the way, it's on an hour later in California than it is in Chicago. And since we're 2 hours later time zone wise, that means it was on 3 hours later. And I was like watching with one eye open on Saturday night. Today is also Captain Picard Day, so happy Captain Picard Day to all of my friends from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Make it so, Steve.
Earl Grey, hot. Friday is Juneteenth, the celebration of the end of slavery in the United States. That's fantastic. And then Sunday, the best holiday of the whole year, Chip, happy Father's Day.
Probably the most important holiday of the year. I would say, you know, Christmas maybe comes in a good second, July 4th, maybe a third. Yeah, but you know, when you really get down to it, Steve, Father's Day is the day to sit back and talk about the importance of fathers.
Absolutely. We are very important, aren't we? Whenever our wives tell us that we are.
That's right. Well, at least our kids think we are. And,
that's right.
They usually have something lined up for us to do.
And we usually just want to not do anything. That's my celebration of Father's Day. That's Sunday. That's coming up. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there.
So one of our favorite things that we did, Steve, was, you know, when your son was playing lacrosse, is announcing the lacrosse game, sitting up there and playing music and saying, mm-hmm. Go! And just and cheering and you yelling, huzzah.
You know how much I love sports, Chip. I know that there was a celebration to be had, so I was shouting the celebratory. That's what you say when you're celebrating. You say huzzah.
That's what being a dad is all about. Go and support your kids.
Monday is the first day of WWDC, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, which is going to be completely online this year. So I look forward to attending that.
I think the topic of this is chips, Steve. Chips.
It's your favorite conference of the whole year is when they get to talk all about you all the time.
About all the chips in the world, Steve.
It's the chip conference.
They're going to introduce a new chip, Steve.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Like I said, you and I got a chance to see my favorite movie of all time, The Blues Brothers from 1980, celebrating its 40th anniversary this week. We had such a great conversation with all of our friends from across the country talking about the joy and the music and the great themes of The Blues Brothers.
So this movie, The Blues Brothers, Steve, what do you think it's about?
The first theme is how wonderful music can be to change people's attitudes. Music is the universal language, and it can make people really see the light of their situation and to find the best way. The other theme is the cultural aspect of the South Side of Chicago is full of a rainbow of people. There's so many types of people, and we can all work together toward the goals that we have. I love this movie.
Well, the defined mission that they announced early on, the mission from God.
We're on a mission from God.
seemed to play out. This is a movie is incredibly quotable. Does it hold up over the time? Well, it's certainly a of its time, but it is a celebration of Chicago in so many ways.
It is absolutely. And I went into that a lot on Saturday when I went through all the different filming locations and you were like, nobody knows where any of those things are, Steve, shut up. And I was like, no, this is exciting. And I find this the Chicago movie. It has all of those pieces of Chicago put together, and I think it holds up great. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, and Princess Leia certainly knows how to use many, many weapons, Steve.
A rocket launcher that sounds like a blaster from Star Wars. That is just a funny little Easter egg that was put in there. This was fun. Again, I'll put in the show notes to get to our whole conversation. We had a great time. You got a chance. You went down a rabbit hole. Boy, oh boy, you saw some documentaries all about race relations and America this week, huh?
Well, it certainly is a very timely topic, and certainly one that gets a charge out of a lot of people. And in fact, if you're part of social media, you can see how, no person believes that another person should be taken advantage of or be used. Or, we all believe that everyone has rights, but how did we have the American experience? Where did this experience come from? And so I got to see three different documentaries. Let's start with the one from 2018, Who Put the Klan in Ku Klux Klan. This is a documentary by historian Neil Oliver, and he examines racism in the Deep South and basically the connection to Scotland, the Scots, who first moved to the Deep South. North Carolina was founded by English, Scots, and Germans. When you start moving down south, South Carolina and Georgia, a lot more Scot influence on there. If you've ever heard of a Scottish person talking about their relationship with England or Britain, you may get a feel that there is a certain theme about Southerners talking about their relationship with the United States. We have Scots versus English, Presbyterians versus Catholicism, the power of cotton. There was a book written by a guy named Walter Scott that romanticized the Southern lifestyle at the time. And we went through the Jim Crow laws and the rise of the Ku Klux Klan from the book from who was a reverend, Thomas Dixon Jr., wrote The Klansman, which became the movie The Birth of a Nation, and the symbols that they end up using, the fiery cross. In fact, where it gets even crazier is how do you deal with something like Stone Mountain, Georgia, where carved in this big, big rock that we go to today. You can go, it's a big park. They have Confederate leaders on the top of that. The beginning of the Klan, they put a cross on top of that and they burned it. I mean, it certainly was a very interesting study on how this group came to be and sort of how we should think about this. And maybe how people who thought one way sort of evolved through the United States. 1925 was the height of the Klan. It had 5 million members. This is a group that was thinking they were doing the right thing for America, and they used the word term Americanism. But it certainly, this is something that I just don't think that we get enough knowledge on. How did we get, for 10,000 years or more, we had slavery in the world. What made the American experience so different? And let's move to our next documentary that I got to see. It was called The Long Shadow. And this is Frances Causey, daughter of the South. She's from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Really? And,
she is. And she wanted to explore the racial divisions in the United States. So growing up, she always knew that there was something unique about her experience. She's a white lady. And how they related to blacks in North Carolina and the South. And it traces, Long Shadow traces slavery's history from America's founding up through the racism today. We get a lot of history of the Commonwealth of Virginia and the American Revolution. I think it's real important to kind of understand how Virginia came to be and why it was unique. And then you can compare that to the American North, who was an incredibly educated group, who slavery was part of their life, but certainly not on the level of the South. In addition, we compare that to the Deep South. I think that you could really get an understanding of sort of how this came to be. We talked a little bit about the Haitian Revolution, and that was where there was an uprising and where the slaves revolted against their masters. In fact, I learned that James Madison's father or grandfather was poisoned by a slave and died. And James Madison, who became the president. And how would that impact the relation between, say, the slave owners and the slaves? To talk a little bit about that. The rules were changed. You were no longer allowed to import people. So that it created an incentive for breeding. There was 4 million freed slaves. And basically, the challenge is, what do you do with this group that certainly was not treated very well, who basically wanted land, they wanted to be able to go and live their life. But for the people who were living in the South, they were concerned. I mean, if someone got their freedom and they recognized how poorly they were treated, how would that change the society? General Sherman offered 40 acres and a mule to freed blacks, is basically, and that was his proposal. If you remember from the Civil War history, Sherman was the one, under Grant's orders, basically went down and just burned towns to the ground. They burned Atlanta to the ground. That's Gone with the Wind.
I've heard of that. This week there was a headline about Gone with the Wind not being a part of HBO Max any longer, huh?
Yeah. Well, and they went up through where I came as my hometown, Fayetteville, North Carolina. There was a armory there that they built rifles. And Sherman burned that to the ground and was making his way up to Richmond, Virginia. And they were begging him not to burn down Richmond. But Sherman truly believed that you needed to have this type of burn and move forward to end this war. When Lincoln was shot, Andrew Johnson, who was a Southerner, was the new president. He revoked Sherman's request for 40 acres and a mule to be given to freed blacks. And 40 acres and a mule basically would allow them to get started and build their life. I mean, many people were poor at that time, but you had to be able to grow your crops. You had to be able to make things. And if you are a poor group, freed slaves, you have your skills set, but you've got to have something to be able to get started. And basically, it was revoked and taken away from them. Once again, this is called The Long Shadow. It's a nice exploration of some of the challenges that the Black experience in the United States has gone through. And I'm going to end with the one from 2016, Liberty and Slavery, The Paradox of America's Founding Fathers. This takes a very high view of slavery in the American experience. And how could a group of people who sat down and wrote about liberty, they put together the Bill of Rights, how could they write these truths that all humans are equal, and then have a group of people that's slaves? And how were they exploring the idea of trying to unwind this? And I think part of what I got from this that was most interesting is that our view of liberty changed from the American view at the time, and that was property owners, to where we went through the French Revolution. No, we didn't get the French Revolution happened, and how it was able to transfer to all individuals, not just property owners. And we also got some of the real challenges that we were dealing with. George Washington owned slaves. And in fact, he explored, like, what could he do to not own slaves? He had a big working farm. You needed the expertise of this group. And I think a lot of people were running into that. And ultimately, he did free his slaves. He freed them after Martha passed away. So in his will, the story was he had two different wills at his deathbed. He tore up one and threw it in the fire, and the one that they kept was the one that freed them at his wife's death. Not at George Washington's death, at his wife's death. Both James Madison and Thomas Jefferson both owned slaves. Thomas Jefferson and James Madison certainly wrote a lot about freedom and liberty and the idea of this. I think this is probably the most interesting of the three documentaries, but all three of them just work out real well together. And I think part of understanding what's going on in the United States today with the challenges that we're dealing with in fact, even last night of our recording, there was a person in Atlanta that was shot. He was sleeping in his car and got out, somehow grabbed a hold of the taser of the police officer, ran away, and the police officer shot him. Well, the question every person has is you have his car right there at the Wendy's. Somebody's going to have to come get this car. Why not just let him run away? But instead, the man was shot and killed. And the response of that was another protest, and the protest turned into a riot. They actually burned the Wendy's down. All these challenges that we're dealing with, I look at the United States experience as one of continually trying to expand liberty for all humans. You've got to understand a little bit about where we came from to where we're dealing with today to recognize that there's some real challenges we're dealing with, and this is a good thing to continue to wake up and figure out how to help every person, you know, experience the most wonderful part of that life, and that's the living and experiencing that life as on the terms that they would like, and let them enjoy the fruits of their livelihood.
Because that's the idea of America, Chip. That is, you know, we left England in order to seek this freedom and this liberty and to offer that to others, even though they might look different. They are still humans, and we should be fighting for all of the people to have all of the rights. It doesn't make any sense in our system for some people to have certain rights and other people to have other rights. But the history of all of this is certainly vital to understanding how this all came about.
All right, so I think I started answering the question but didn't answer it. There was a question that was proposed in one of these that said for 10,000 years or more, slavery existed. I mean, in Roman society, slavery existed. In Greek society, slavery existed. In Egyptian society, every society had some form of slavery. That was part of it. What was different in the American experience? Well, what was different was it was race-based. 250 years ago in the founding of our country, we had a race-based slavery that continues, not slavery and that type of slavery, but just the challenges we're dealing with unwinding this still is happening today. Anyway, my hope is that within our lifetime or children's lifetime, that a lot of this will be solved.
That's my hope as well. I think that we are at a turning point. I hope that this time, as much as we were at a turning point so many times before in American history, I hope that this time enough people see the problem and therefore we are going to work toward a solution. That's my greatest hope for the 21st century.
Things are better today than they have been in the past. They're just not there yet. And just right. Once again, if we just look at it as a continuum, we'll continue to move forward. And if we can escalate that in a way, hey, how wonderful that we can do that.
There you go. I bet you Stacy didn't watch a bunch of documentaries. Let's see what Stacy saw.
Hi, everyone. This week, I've been continuing to watch B-movies on Prime, and I've found one that I really think you should watch. Bubba the Redneck Werewolf, which is currently on Prime for free. I'm going to be honest, this film looked and sounded terribly cheesy when I found it, but I was drawn in by the film poster. And hey, it has a werewolf, why not? I went in thinking it would be bad, but it turned out to be a surprisingly nicely done horror comedy with a lot of sweetness to it. Bubba is a dog catcher at the local dog pound. When he's not taking care of the dogs that he's caught, he's either drinking at the bar or he's mooning over the love of his life, Bobby Joe, who he's been besotted with since high school. But she doesn't quite feel the same way, wanting Bubba to stand up for himself and for her rather than still being who he used to be. She's moved on and Bubba's sad. In this sadness, he manages to accidentally summon the devil, who offers him a proposition that could make his dreams come true. And trouble ensues for the rest of the town as the devil makes his way through, granting wants and desires with catches along the way. Based on the comic book created by Mitch Hyman, who plays the devil in this film adaption, Bubba the Redneck Werewolf is silly, trashy, and sweet, and it wouldn't feel out of place on Troma now. There's swearing, a bit of nudity, drinking, violence, gore, and so many jokes. All wrapped up in the story about some essentially nice people. And it's those nice people within this story that make it so watchable. It's very hard not to root for a man like Bubba, who treats the dogs he catches as though they're his own beloved pets. You want him to do good and get the girl. It is a classic monkey's paw story, and it makes itself evident as the devil meets the other townsfolk, giving them exactly what they want and holding firm to the adage of be careful what you wish for because you just might get it. Mitch is superb as the devil here, playing it more like an otherworldly businessman, rather than just a demonic ruler of hell. It makes him feel less out-and-out evil and instead more a conduit to human mistakes. He might be the bad guy here technically, but it never feels like he should take all of the blame for the mischief he creates because after all, he's just doing what we asked. The makeup and effects for the werewolf are a combination of practical and CGI, which here has been really well done, and the CGI enhances the practical side rather than detracting from it. I love this still movement to Bubba's face once he's changed into a werewolf. He can still emote and be a 3D character, rather than just being rendered into a 2D monster once he's changed. As I said at the start of this, I went in expecting it to be awful, but it's been done with so much love and care that the end result is a fun horror comedy in the vein of The Immense Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, which, if you haven't seen, is a total must-watch, by the way. There has been mention of the possibility of a sequel to this film coming, and in my honest opinion, this could make for a fun and popular series along the lines of the franchise films of the 80s. You will finish this film with a big smile on your face, and who doesn't want and need that right now? So that's all for me from this time. If you want to hear more of my ramblings on films and whatnot, or chat with me about horror, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Films with Stacey, where you can also find links to my website to read more. Until next time, happy viewing.
Opening, or more likely streaming this week, we've got some interesting stuff coming to our televisions. There is a Apple TV Plus documentary called Dads, just in time for Father's Day. This is directed by Bryce Dallas Howard, and there's a feature about her father in this one, Ron Howard, coming together to talk about what fatherhood looks like in the 21st century.
A lot of interviews here. We have Conan, Steve, Will Smith, Jimmy Fallon, Neil Patrick Harris. This looks like a lot of fun, and obviously it's a very important topic. I would say for every human out there, they probably should watch this. I don't know why I'm saying that, Steve, but you're a father, right?
Yeah, this is important. It's important to honor our fathers this week. Let's have priorities here, kids.
Without fathers, there wouldn't be families, Steve.
That's true. That is very true. There's a new season of Mr. Iglesias on Netflix coming this week. This is the sitcom featuring comedian Gabriel Iglesias as a good-natured high school teacher. This is very similar to Welcome Back, Kotter, with the new comedian who's also named Gabriel. This works really well.
So does that mean Gabe Kaplan is going to come on at the end and tell us a funny story to his wife?
Gabe Iglesias, yeah. I think he could probably pull off that final joke at the end as well as Welcome Back, Kotter did.
And Gabriel Iglesias, we can look forward to his tour in the tour of poker, right? The championship of poker.
He's going to become a poker player like Gabe Kaplan did, yes.
That's right. Later, just look forward to that a few years from now.
That's right. We've got Feel the Beat on Netflix. This is a movie about a young lady who doesn't find the success she's looking for on Broadway, so she goes back home and reluctantly goes to train a group of misfit young dancers. That we've seen this story before, haven't we? Isn't this
Steve?
Isn't
this the story is a brand new story. This never happens. And they're going to have to watch out because if they don't do it right, Steve, they're going to tear down the
Community center.
And they're going to put up a shopping mall.
Right. The remake of Perry Mason is finally coming to HBO Max. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but it's finally opening this week. This is a reimagined idea of an attorney in Los Angeles, but this time it's set in 1932 instead of in the 60s.
Well, this looks pretty interesting. And just for all of our listeners, they will list something that is going to start streaming, and then they will change it the week that it comes out. I don't know how we're getting these incorrect, but it's the COVID-19 that's making release dates kind of interesting.
All the release dates are fluid at this point. Everything is changing as the situation is changing, for sure. There is a documentary called Bully,
Coward Victim, the story of Roy Cohn.
So Roy Cohn is a power broker in New York. He knows a lot of powerful people. And then all of a sudden it becomes, it's Pride Month. So between his controversial, I guess some of the interviews they're saying he's a very controversial figure. Then all of a sudden we learn that he was gay and the story must change. But anyway, there we go.
Yeah, he is a big name on a lot of American history. There's a lot of powerful people that owe Roy Cohn something, which is it could be good and could be bad, Chip. There is a action picture with Joseph Gordon-Levitt at the helm, and when I say the helm, I mean it, because he is the pilot of an aircraft that is hijacked in the movie 7500 that's coming to Amazon Prime.
This looks really good. So many of the things that we're talking about are family things, or this, but this is on Amazon Prime. This looks like a very good movie.
There is a new cartoon of Pete the Cat. Season 2 of that series is coming to Amazon Prime this week. I'm not a big fan of Pete the Cat, but my younger students, my first grade, second grade students, really enjoy the storytelling from Pete the Cat. So they'll enjoy that one.
So this is children's programming, and it's a cartoon. And it's on Amazon Prime.
There is a sequel to Love, Simon. This is Love, Victor on Hulu, the story of young men and young ladies finding themselves in high school, figuring out especially their sexual orientations.
So Love, Simon was a movie that came out a couple of years ago. I know my daughter went to see it. Love, Victor is a series. So this is more like if you can equate it to a television series, but it's a streaming series on Hulu. And you're correct. This is a high school experience, and obviously sexuality was something very important in Love, Simon, and they're going to explore sexuality in Love, Victor.
All right. For me, I much prefer exploring food, Chip.
Well, Steve, is there some kind of show that stars Princess Amidala?
Princess Amidala? You think that this is a Princess Amidala thing?
Well, it looks like it says Padma, Steve.
This is a real human being, not a fictional character from a really crummy prequel movie, Chip. This is Taste the Nation with Padma Lakshmi. This looks wonderful.
So is Anakin going to share a meal with Padma and float different fruits and stuff back and forth to each other?
This is a fantastic food exploration, how American food got to be where it is. This is a 10-episode series on Hulu. Episode 10 is the Poke Bowl episode. I will probably skip right to episode 10, just so you know.
So as we're watching the trailer for this, she has got to be like the most glamorous person you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she's going to go visit a bunch of fun places and eat a lot of fun food. And what do you know? It looks like a nice, light, fun show.
This one is absolutely my pick of the week because I love explorations of food. I love watching PBS specials about food and how we got here and where we're headed with all the different combinations.
Steve, Blues Brothers is not the only story that was based in Chicago.
Yes, it is. No, you're right. Fine. There is season 3 of The Chi coming to Showtime this week.
Isn't this that the Chi?
No. Shy, like Chicago.
Oh!
The shit. Isn't it the shit? This is coming to Showtime this week. This is another coming-of-age story about a group of students coming together and learning about themselves and learning about race and connections and redemption. This is an interesting series.
And this takes place in Shermer, right?
No, there ain't no Shermer in Illinois.
It's on Showtime, by the way. It's called The Chi. This looks really good.
Book it. Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. You have continued your study of economics and looking at where we're at and where we're headed. You read this week, The Scandal of Money, Why Wall Street Recovers But the Economy Never Does. This was published in 2016 by George Gilder.
This is, and I'm not going to talk too much about this, but I have an interest in, well, obviously economics, but I also have an interest in kind of figuring out how the market works and why maybe some people are not experiencing everything that they could be experiencing. So this is the exploration of George Gilder's book. He is a very partisan person, so I want to warn any person who will not enjoy that type of conversation, this may not be the book for you. I did not realize that before I started listening to it. But he is a supply-side economist. He has a history of writing about these things. But I think that his question, why Wall Street recovers, but the economy never does, really is a timely question. Because we are in the middle of a pandemic. And we are, as far as the federal government is concerned, is spending a lot of money. We're at near 0% interest rates.
And we are officially in a recession again, right? That was officially named last week?
Well, it looks like it. The U.S. economy is in a recession right now. Interesting that the market is going up. We certainly had a big movement one of the days this week, but that is interesting. Yeah, there is an official definition recession. And interest rates... Federal Reserve is basically given a couple of mandates. One is inflation, and then the other is the basically the cost of money. And interest rates are 0% right now as far as the cost of money. And usually that's not a good sign at all because it means demand. Think about if the demand for something is high, the price usually rises, right? Well, the Federal Reserve has some tools that they can play around with that a little bit. But when it's 0%, that's a terrible sign.
And it could possibly go lower, right? We could get into a negative interest rate potentially here?
That potentially is true. We could go to a negative situation. And that think about a negative situation, you negative interest situation. Let's just say you bought a house for a certain price. You bought a house for $100,000 and you have to pay back $95,000. Okay? That would be a negative interest rate. And you say, well, what's the problem with that? Well, the problem with that is it means there's a lot of properties out there that people are just asking or begging people to take over because there's not enough demand for it. And that could be a real challenge. Gilder spent some time talking about the Federal Reserve Bank. He talks a little bit about how Washington works. He talks a little bit about the too big to fail challenges that are out there, particularly banking, and basically how it impacts the middle class. Now, even if you don't come to his conclusions, the exploration of this idea, and once you know, I know the economy, you never truly can grasp everything that's going on.
It's a huge concept.
And it is, and you have to recognize it is not a machine that you can just move a few levers and everything moves the way you think it should. You can talk about it. You can make some policies that potentially could impact some areas, but it is certainly you're treading always and trying to see through muddy waters, and you just don't know if what you're doing is helpful or hurting. And then once again, when you make an action, that creates incentives. Those incentives could be good or bad and how that impact things. I think this is an incredibly interesting study. And I continue to explore writings and papers and books on this because as much as I know, I just don't ever feel like I know enough. And I think that if you can get through some of the partisan talk in it, at least at the beginning of the book, and sort of get down to the meat of the ideas, you can at least understand part of the conversation and part of the challenges and opportunities that could exist in kind of with greater understanding. So I think I'm going to leave it at that. I think that for those who have interest in this subject, this is an interesting book to pick up.
It's at least one piece of the puzzle. Like you said, it is such a huge thing, the economy that you've been studying for so long. This is one piece of information. And it's a good place to start, maybe not.
And once you recognize you cannot control it, and even if you're the biggest players out there, you're Bill Gates, well, your podium may be bigger than most people, but you really are at the mercy of millions of decisions made by millions of people, and you're one of those people. What we really want things are to remain in a time of peace where opportunities happen and that you can be part of those opportunities. And I have concerns about that, but I think that these are subjects that are just beyond what the average person can impact.
There you go. That is The Scandal of Money, Why Wall Street Recovers But the Economy Never Does, by George Gilder.
Scroll with it.
Just to our scroll with it, you know, Chip, we said that this is the 40th anniversary of the Blues Brothers. We had a great conversation on Saturday night with all of our hoodlum friends talking about the themes and our love of this story.
Well, the celebration of Chicago, Steve.
It is absolutely that. And the celebration continues. We've got Kevin Pollak with us, who plays Jake in our local Blues Brothers tribute band, the Blues Brothers, B-L-O-O-Z-E. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going good, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking time out of your busy Zoom schedule to help us out with our celebration of the Blues Brothers today.
Oh, for sure, for sure. You know, it's interesting enough that, you know, because of what's going on, a lot of our shows are canceled this year, and it's the 40th anniversary, and it's supposed to be our biggest year. So we're still hoping some shows still survive the fall.
Well, just like the movie Blues Brothers, they only got to perform the big show, and then, you know, they went to prison and performed.
Yeah, exactly. This is prison.
Yeah, it is for a lot of us. So you're still hoping for Huntley Fall Fest? Is that I'm hoping to see you?
It's looking good right now, so we'll see what happens as we get closer. And
I look forward to that. I really, truly enjoy watching you on stage as Jake. You have so much fun up there.
So tell us a little bit about this comedy sketch and sort of why do you think it's endured for 40 years?
Oh, man. I mean, it's iconic. That was just one of the most out-of-the-blue moments that you didn't expect on Saturday Night Live. And then another out-of-the-blue moment for it to become a movie and then a hit film. I mean, it's just like everything about them and the whole shtick and getting the band back together. It's, you know, and Chicago. It's the history of, you know, well, not the history, but it's a great movie. I mean, it's just a great get up. I love everything about it. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to join the Blues Brothers.
We talked about on Saturday how one of the major themes of the movie, of the story, is how music can bring us together. Do you see that in your performances with the Blues Brothers?
Absolutely. You know, every time people come and see us, you know, it's all about the music and listening to the music and bringing back memories for them. And, you know, they just have a great time.
So how did you get involved with the Blues Brothers?
Well, I'm also an actor, and I was playing Joe Cocker in a professional show downtown called Men of Soul at the Black Ensemble Theater. And Chris Jones of the Chicago Tribune gave me a review that said, Pollock had the wild-eyed look of Belushi and enough gravel in his voice to fill my backyard path. And that review, basically, somebody said, you should join a Blues Brothers band. And I was like, okay. So I went looking and found one. They auditioned me, and I got it, and I've been with them for since 2016.
And do you still do the Joe Cocker song in the set?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we do, with a little help from my friends, or I go nuts and do all the contortions and everything. It's the show-stopping number every time we do it in concert.
Again, I look forward every time you come into town with the Blues Brothers to come and see the joy that you bring to the part and bring to the audience. There's nothing better for me than hearing that music. One of the things that Chip said on Saturday was the Blues Brothers is just a cover band. So you're a cover band of a cover band. Are you okay with that?
We're not really a cover band. We are a tribute band. We do other music from the era. Like, we do Stax, we do Motown, we do all the good music from that time period. But we're a show band. We're exactly what they were, a rhythm and blues review show band. You get everything with it. And, you know, we're adding more and more material to make people enjoy it more, where it's not just only Blues Brothers music. It's going to be like Bruno Mars. We're going to throw in Earth, Wind & Fire, Chicago, do Ides of March. Like, we mix up the horn bands and a lot of that stuff. We're throwing in a Huey Lewis medley, Prince medley, one of my originals that I wrote.
You definitely got the horn section for all that. You've got some great musicians behind you.
Oh, yeah.
And it sounds like that if the Blues Brothers would have continued, Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi would have been able to continue this band, they certainly would evolve, just like your band has evolved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we always tell people that this is like, if they were still around, this is the music they would cover. I mean, mm-hmm. Seriously, it's happening of the times. They would try to incorporate all kinds of styles for people to enjoy.
So COVID-19 certainly has impacted a lot of performers and their ability to bring their music to the population. Mm-hmm. Tell us, I mean, do you see this opening up? How is the band working around this?
Well, we're having a rehearsal on the 28th outdoors, socially distant, to keep our chops up. We maybe rehearse 1-2 times a year.
Really?
Yeah. We don't rehearse much.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, we were able to just jump on stage and get the party started. So, but you know, everybody misses each other. Everybody has their own thing that they got going on, and some people are not as healthy as others and not willing to go out and stuff like that. So, not the entire band's coming along, but we just want to play, and we can't play, and we don't want to do like a live stream concert because it's just not the same. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the same as coming out to a live show and hearing the horns blare and hearing, you know, everything in a live setting. We're trying to handle it best we can, and whatever gigs that we could savor and save, great. If not, you know, everything's being rescheduled next year. So at least next year, all our fans can have a ton of shows to look forward to from us.
Well, that little X over the 40, it'd be like, 41 years, the greatest.
We're making up from last year. No, I'd be like, sorry, guys, we're late. But yeah, so that's how we're handling it. So, and you know, I got some members playing with me on Thursday for something, but that I cannot announce until June 27th. So officially announced, so just all keep right. Tuned.
So this is a great time to ask that question. You know, how can our listeners find more about the Blues Brothers, but also find out more about the projects you're working on?
You can find me on Facebook, Kevin Pollack, P-O-L-L-A-C-K, Kevin Pollack in the Newtown on Facebook as well, my band, and which I haven't updated lately. So if you become friends with me, you'll see more than what I usually post. But I always have crazy stuff going on. I got Zoom in the Movies that I do every Saturday night, and there's a lot of fun stuff that is going to be happening with that. Some big stuff that, you know, people are noticing. And that's also a group on Facebook you can check out that I run.
Tell us a little bit about Zooming the Movies.
Well, Zooming the Movies is this series I started right when the pandemic started, where I get movie scripts and act out a movie as a table read with a bunch of actors from all over the country. We pick a different movie each week and, you know, cast it the best we could. And now celebrities are starting to take notice and wanting to participate. And we just had our first one on Saturday for Forrest Gump, Robert Torti, who, if you guys remember That Thing You Do, he was Freddie Fredrickson in that movie, Mr. Downtown. Yeah. Yeah. So he's done quite a few share of films and TV, and he was our Lieutenant Dan to my Forrest Gump. So that was that. I'll be releasing that one in the next couple of days. And I mean, it's starting to take off. We're going to do some benefit readings for the Actors Fund to benefit that. And we got some big Hollywood stars that said yes to this. So it's going to be fun. And we're going to do The Producers, the original Mel Brooks movie, Some Like It Hot, and the movie MASH.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's going to be starting probably in July, the benefit readings and whatnot. I'll announce all those dates on my Facebook in the group. Yeah,
forward to all of those. I've enjoyed all of them so far, along with your Corona karaoke.
Oh, yeah.
that you've been putting together.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about Corona karaoke.
Corona karaoke is this. I just do a karaoke show Facebook Live at my house, or now I've been going to other friends' houses that have PA systems, and I just pick a different theme each week, and I pick out 10 songs and of karaoke, and I broadcast it live. So, you know, just giving something for people to do if they're bored.
Oh, how awesome.
Yeah.
What fun.
Yeah, it's been fun.
And once again, your latest single is available on all sorts of platforms?
Yeah, Holiday. That's my new single. We're going to be making a music video for that. We'll be shooting it this probably next month in August. So July and August we'll be filming. And the last one you can watch on YouTube, Man About Town, that won like 3 International Film Festival awards. So that was a blast. Wonderful. Yeah.
Great job, man. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for the fun. Thank you for the jumping and jiving and being on stage. I just love watching you, man. I love it.
I appreciate that.
Take care of yourself.
You too, man. Thanks, guys.
I want to thank Kevin for all of that fun to be had. There's even more fun to be had, though, Chip, because every morning we are reading through Sherlock Holmes with Professor Pamela Bedore.
We are, and it is fascinating. And if you've been reading along with us, we're almost finished with his last bow. Or is it last bow, Steve? We never know.
Some reminiscences of Sherlock Holmes.
Exactly. And you can start with us. After we finish that, we're going to start working on the sign of four, Steve.
Mm-hmm. That's another story that is very relevant to today's world. So I look forward to our conversations with that. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes. Go to our website, sandwichesatirregularhours.com, to be a part of all that Sherlock Holmes conversation. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think so. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
See you in the future.